The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studios. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Glad you can be with us. Very busy news afternoon as we get rolling here. And you just heard in Ursula's newscast our top story.
The Big Lead. Top story.
So how many teachers, districts, strikes, potential strikes are we looking at now?
I saw about 6,000 teachers are on strike.
6,000 teachers.
And yes, we're so tens about of thousands of students are affected.
Yeah.
And the number of, I mean, they're all in varying stages. We actually have a map on mynorthwest.com. But, you know, some of the big ones where they're still on strike include Puyallup.
I saw some emotional stuff at the Puyallup school board meeting last night.
Right. Yeah. Tom Water, a bunch in Southwest Washington, a bunch.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where my wife's from.
Right.
So we
Vancouver
keep in touch
area.
With the Columbian. We read the Columbian and Oregon Live to stay up on the hometown news. So, yeah, it's and you know, as I've been talking about since this whole thing started to crest, we're going to see a tsunami in a couple of years. And I'm not going to get down the emotional black hole that was the last couple of weeks on the show, because I get it. No matter how much, you know, my wife and I have done for school board levies and, you know, private school foundations and all of that, if you don't just absolutely unequivocally think that too much is not enough and that teachers who are fairly well compensated already should still get gigantic raises, you're just going to be hated. And so I'm not going to get down that hole again. But we do have to talk about the reality of why some districts, like Puyallup, for example, why they're standing strong. Because, you know, you listen to parents and they just say, yeah, give them more money. And you know, Seattle teachers are upset. I heard a bunch of them. They got more than 10% raise. They just settled. And they're upset. Some of them furious that they're only getting a 10% raise because Shoreline's 24% and Edmonds was 20-something percent. And so everybody's attitude is just keep giving them more and more and more. And where the money's going to come from, well, that's what we need to talk about in just a moment. But here's some parents down in Puyallup.
They should, yes. They work hard. We trust them with our kids, and I think they do a good job, and they need more money.
I can't help but feel for them, you know. They feel like they deserve more, and I'm willing to support that.
Okay. And so if you don't just embrace that unequivocally, then you're a horrible, horrible human being. And, you know, I talked about the husband-wife couple who were making $181,000 teaching in the Shoreline schools, and they get on a video and said, finally, we're being respected, not just with words, but really respected now with more money. And here's the reality. In 1 or 2 years, there's not going to be any money for these raises. It's just not going to be there. That's why the teachers' union is working so feverishly right now to get all they can locked in, because there's a temporary spike in the revenues from this McCleary decision. And in a couple of years, there just simply is not going to be money to keep paying the teachers these gigantic raises unless they raise our taxes billions and billions of dollars. And that's what's going on here. That's why we have all these teachers on strike. They want to lock in now because the money is not going to be there in 1 or 2 years. Here's from the Puyallup school board meeting last night, because the administration down Puyallup, they get that. They said, look, we can't give you these raises because we do not have the money to continue paying you this for a couple of years. But here's what was going on down there last night.
How you treat us and make us feel won't go away or heal quickly.
I would not want to be anywhere else but in the middle of this with you.
I'm a product of Puyallup teachers. All we're asking is to be able to compete fairly with our colleagues around the state.
And what I do not want to do is look at our 200 youngest teachers in the face and say, I gave away your job.
That's one of the school board members who said, your job's not going to be there for you in a couple of years if we give you what you're asking for now, because we will not have the money. And the teachers union is, oh, we'll just raise everyone's taxes in 2 years. Well, if you got a massive property tax hike in 2018, which almost everybody in the Puget Sound area did, you're already paying hundreds and hundreds, in many cases, thousands of dollars more to the schools in property tax hikes. One of the school board members down in Puyallup, he was very emotional, Dane Looker. He was very emotional as he was telling the teachers, it's not that we don't love you.
The fact that you don't believe that we don't care about you hurts.
And you can hear the emotion in his voice. And I understand that emotion because you may have heard it in my voice on Thursday that, you know, obviously he has gotten beat up because he's trying to be fiscally responsible. And you know the mantra of our show is that government should be more efficient, that unsustainable levels of government is unfair to the taxpayer. And that's what's going on. You have a school board in Puyallup. Teachers are on strike now because the school board is saying, look, just because, you know, Highline got a 30% raise, we can't do that because Highline's not going to have the money for you guys in 2 years. And the attitude of the unions is, well, you'll find it somewhere. You'll find some taxes to raise. And there are a lot of families that are already, you know, being broken financially by the level of taxation. Nobody owns a home anymore. Even if you pay off your mortgage, you know, you work, you sweat, you're diligent, maybe you put off some things so you can pay off your mortgage, and then you find out your property taxes are $10,000, $15,000 a year. And so you're really just renting the house from the government because you're still paying $1,000 a month in property taxes. And that's what I feel is missing from this whole debate and this whole equation. And that's, I've tried to be the lone voice in the wilderness for the taxpayers in all of this. It's not that we don't like teachers. It's not that we don't think that they deserve to be decently compensated for what is. It is a tough job. There are a lot of exceptional teachers. There are some bad ones in every building, too. Like I've said, every student, every parent, every fellow teacher, every administrator knows about the bad ones, too. But the union isn't doing anything to say, well, we'll make it easier to get rid of the bad teachers. They're saying, yeah, you're paying a husband, wife $181,000. Why don't we give them $225,000 as a couple? In salary alone, that's not benefits, salary alone. And all I'm saying is the taxpayers, you better understand that there is a tsunami coming in a couple of years when all of these districts that have given out these gigantic raises, they are going to come to you for hundreds or thousands of dollars more per family. And the story's going to be, well, you don't want us to lay off teachers. Remember McCleary? It was all about class size. Remember that? That's what we call the good old days, where it was actually about doing something for the kids. They told us that class size was so important. And now they've all negotiated away class. Oh, we'll still have 30 kids per class. Just give us more money. It was never about the kids. It was never about class size. Okay. So it doesn't mean we hate teachers. It means that we think they're being decently compensated, but somebody's got to speak out for the taxpayers. And that's why I do. Up next in the big lead.
The big lead. Your tax dollars at work.
And then you have, you know, what's continuing to plague our entire region. There was an interesting court decision from the most liberal, the most overturned court in the land, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And they ruled today that cities cannot prosecute people for sleeping on the street if those people have nowhere else to go. Now, this is the same principle in which in Seattle, people can sleep in their cars and stay parked for months at a time in RVs, in cars, everywhere. The problem with this court ruling is, you know, the cops, they go and they offer services, and most of the people on the street, they refuse the services. They say that they would rather, you know, make using heroin and abusing alcohol and sleeping on the street. That is their lifestyle of choice. And when offered services, they refuse them. Up in Lake City, and I've seen the steady decline of Lake City, and it all started when they put a big food bank in there. And what makes this such a tough subject is, you know, my wife and I, we've always encouraged our kids to be philanthropic. You know, I don't believe government should be our philanthropy. I do believe we should be philanthropic in our hearts. And my girls would go and volunteer at that food bank in Lake City. I would encourage all my basketball girls. They needed community service hours. And I would always encourage them to volunteer at that Lake City food bank, too. The problem is the food bank has become this attractant to people who refuse all services. And they, you know, I've told you the story. I've seen some people shoot up heroin in the parking lot of a large variety store in the neighborhood. Channel 4, they were out covering, they were talking to the owner of grocery outlet, Mike Sandberg, at ComoNews.com.
She went through right back in the back steps and just pulled down her pants and did her thing right there.
There is a public bathroom one block away from this guy's grocery store. One block away. It's a huge kind of a porta potty, that type of structure, but it's huge because it's handicap accessible. And yet people choose to not go a block. They will poop on the sidewalk in front of all of these businesses. And our friends at Q13 News, they talked to a resident there, Jennifer, who, you know, saw human defecation right out of the outside the post office.
And they crap down here. So that's the newest pile today. It's infectious. It's human waste.
Yeah, human waste is everywhere in this neighborhood. And as I said, it all started going downhill when they put in a food bank. And so what do? You want to help people. You want to feed the hungry. And yet these poor business owners or the people who live there, crime has skyrocketed in the neighborhood. Mike Sandberg, who owns that grocery outlet, he also talked to Q13 News, and he says that he used to clean up the poop.
I filed a complaint with the city. I used to go out there and clean up the garbage all the time, but it just got to be kind of a fruitless endeavor, so I just quit doing it. And it grew. And so now it's kind of intimidating, too.
Yeah, and there's a level of belligerence. They don't want services. They want the food, and they want to be left alone to poop on the sidewalk. And you have all these business owners who are the economic engine of our city, and nobody is looking out for them. Nobody. City council sure isn't. The mayor isn't. They have contempt for them because they're capitalists. And, ooh, capitalism is evil. Channel 4 talked to one of the accused poopers at ComoNews.com.
I mean, there's not very many options, so what do you do?
That said, there is a public bathroom just a block from those businesses. This honey bucket, which the group told me was just too gross to use.
Yeah, that's just a drug den.
Jeez. What a city. So the honey bucket's too gross to use, so they poop on the sidewalk. That's just lovely. I'm going to talk with the owner of that grocery outlet store, Mike Sandberg, at 1:30 this afternoon. Talk to him firsthand about what he's going through. And thanks to our friends at Q13 News and Como News who got the ball rolling with that story. Next up in the big lead.
The big lead. Top trending.
Seahawks season begins on Sunday in Denver against the Broncos, a game that you will hear 1:25 kickoff right here on your home of the Seahawks, 97.3 Cairo FM. I'll be on the air with all of my pregame co-hosts beginning at 10 o'clock Sunday morning to kick off the 2018 Seahawks season. And the Seahawks got some welcome news this afternoon.
Watson out of the shotgun on third and 10. Miller stays in the backfield. Four-man rush. Watson throws down the middle. It's intercepted. It's Earl Thomas coming back near side. He can go midfield 40, 35. He's going to go 20, 10, 5. No flags. Touchdown, Seahawks.
Earl Thomas, who is unquestionably one of the best players in Seahawks history. He's a potential Hall of Famer. He's one of the best safeties ever. Via Instagram today, Earl Thomas reported that his holdout is ending. The Seahawks reportedly had been offered a trade of a second-round draft pick from the Dallas Cowboys, but they said that's not enough. And Earl Thomas is scheduled to make a half $1 million for every game this season. $8 million is his 2018 contract. He's in the final year of that contract, and he wanted an extension before he goes into this final year, but there was a complete stalemate. Earl didn't have any leverage. The Seahawks, they were really holding all the cards in the negotiations. And now Earl Thomas reported that he is coming back to the Seahawks. Whether he'll be ready to play on Sunday, it's unknown at this point. But we'll have more as the week progresses. And that is your big lead for today.
The big lead on Cairo Radio.
There are an awful lot of people upset at Nike because of this Colin Kaepernick campaign that says he has sacrificed everything. There are some military people who really sacrificed everything. Former Green Beret Nate Boyer, I had a chance to catch up with him. He's the guy trying out for the Seahawks a few years back. We'll hear what Nate Boyer has to say about this new Nike ad campaign. That's straight ahead as we get rolling here on a Wednesday afternoon. Love to hear from you. You can contact us on the Online Trading Academy text line at 98973. That's 98973. So Roy Moore is suing Sacha Baron Cohen. I had not heard this. Sacha Baron Cohen
this just
Showtime.
Happened. Yeah, just
for
just
how much?
$95 million.
Oh, man. You know, at some point, though, because this Sacha Baron Cohen show, I get why it's popular, because they've provided some really funny sound bites that we've played the last several weeks. But the people who have been the victim of and that's not my kind of humor. When somebody is gracious enough to say, I'll do an interview with you, and you're playing a character just to goof on that person, it's not real. So I knew that somebody was going to sue eventually. But Roy Moore is a tough guy to root for. Then you have this. A lot of veterans and active military are very upset with this new Nike advertising campaign. Has a picture of Colin Kaepernick and the words, believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything. Now, that has not sat well with some people. Tim Kennedy is an Army sniper, a Green Beret, and Tim Kennedy this morning talked to TMZ, and he said, man, is this Nike campaign misguided?
Every single person in that room has lost 10 friends at least. Every single one of them. Every single person in that room. And then we walk in with a new Nike poster that's going to be at sell at Hot Topic or Barnes & Noble or wherever it's going to be a sell at, talking about giving, sacrificing. You know, you're just like, oh, man.
Now, if you're somebody who's lost a loved one serving our country and you hear Colin Kaepernick's in an ad, believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything. Colin Kaepernick hasn't sacrificed a thing. Now, I told you the first time he started sitting for the anthem that he was free to do so. The thing I didn't like about Kaepernick was when he wore the socks with the, you know, pigs wearing police hats at practice. I would have suspended him if I was the San Francisco 49ers for that, for disrespecting cops on the job. But, you know, sitting for the anthem, it's a free country. And I always said that all these guys who sat, I disagree with them, but all those people who fought for their rights, they, you know, they fought for their right to sit, among a lot of other things. So I'll play for you in just a moment. Nate Boyer, the Green Beret who tried out for the Seahawks a few years ago. And I talked with Nate right before I went on the air today. But I played for him some of the things that Tim Kennedy said, like this.
Let's talk about sacrifice. I'm in a room of a bunch of heroes that in a heartbeat would die for Colin's right to do what he's doing. That's sacrifice. I'm not talking about giving away some position, even though I'm not good enough to fill it because I'm not very talented as a quarterback and I just want to keep my name in the news. I'm just going to keep talking about it. You know, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about real heroes, and I'm surrounded by a bunch of them right now.
Yeah, our real heroes are the men and women who serve our country. And I did talk with Nate Boyer. It was a really bad connection and kept dropping out. So we're hopefully going to talk with Nate Boyer live at 2:05 this afternoon. In fact, I'm getting a thumbs up from Nicole as I say that because Nate just confirmed. But I talked to him. I played him that Tim Kennedy clip right before we went on the air. It didn't sit right with me. I wanted to get your reaction to this campaign, Nate.
Yeah, you know, first of all, Tim Kennedy is a really good friend of mine. Tons of respect for that guy. You know, he's sacrificed quite a bit and has been just a great example of what, you know, that flag is supposed to represent in an American, in my opinion.
Yes.
You know, those words, sacrifice everything, just those specific words, that's really hard for a lot of us to kind of come to terms with in the military community, in the veteran community, because so many of us have lost, you know, our brothers in arms that really did, they paid the ultimate sacrifice. They really did sacrifice everything. And that hurts and that's hard, you know. And so I look at it this way. I don't think Nike would have done that at all. I know they wouldn't have if they didn't think it was potentially going to be profitable, if they didn't think it was going to be a good business move. I mean, it is a business at the end of the day.
Yeah, but, man, for Nike to slap our military community in the face like that, and they had to know. They had to know the firestorm that would come out of this. And the thing about Kaepernick, let's get real about Colin Kaepernick. He wasn't that good a quarterback. He took the 49ers to a Super Bowl, and then the NFL started catching up to him. He was somewhat unique, kind of like Russell Wilson. You know, Russell Wilson, running quarterback with a good arm. In Russell Wilson's case, he has been able to sustain his greatness. He really has. Kaepernick, he couldn't. And the NFL is remarkable in catching up to unique skill sets, which is why the game itself, if somebody, you know, like a few years ago, the Seahawks, you know, with Marshawn, sprint draw, they had this play that was really successful for them. But then the league starts catching up with it, and they start game planning for it. Well, that's what was happening with Kaepernick. He had a declining skill set. He was benched by the 49ers. He was their backup quarterback. He got back in midseason, only won, I think he went like 1-10, something like that, and the one win was over a horrible team. And the league caught up to the guy. And he was facing the humiliation of, you know, just being somebody who, you know, shone very brightly for a very short period of time, and he was looking at being a backup. Now, I don't know if he was this calculating, but when he started sitting for the anthem, all of a sudden, this whole commercial opportunity opened up for him. He could make millions being an NFL quarterback, or he could make millions being a Nike spokesperson, being a non-player with an endorsement deal. And he has sacrificed nothing. And man, I was down in San Diego this weekend, and there's this memorial. It's by La Jolla. My wife and I were just driving in the hills of La Jolla, and we saw, I've got to remember, I think it's the Mount Soledad National Memorial. And it's private, just the top of one of the highest peaks in the area. And you have a sweeping view of the Pacific Ocean into the south of Mission Bay in downtown San Diego. And there are all of these plaques for men and women who have served and died. And there's a huge cross on the top of this hillside. And it's gorgeous. But you just walk around. My wife and I spent a lot of time just walking around. We didn't even know it was there. We stumbled on it, decided to stop. And the solemnity of, you know, just all of these beautiful plaques of people who served. And there are so many people who look like they might have been family members of some of them, taking pictures of their loved one's plaque. And there are so many people who have sacrificed everything, everything. And even if Colin Kaepernick, even if he gave up an NFL contract to do this, all he gave up there was money. There are men and women who have lost limbs. They've sacrificed body parts. In many cases, they've sacrificed their lives. And for Nike and Colin Kaepernick to have the audacity to put his picture, because he sat for the anthem and doesn't have the skill to get a gig now, believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything. That there is a corporation and an individual who have no sense of perspective. And Nike's a pretty calculating business. They're one of the most successful businesses in, you know, in our world. But what a slap in the face this is to men and women who really have sacrificed a whole heck of a lot more than Colin Kaepernick has. Love to hear your thoughts. You can text us, the Online Trading Academy text line 98973. Lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. So it's time for the media to fight back. That's what I found out today from MSNBC's Chuck Todd, because President Trump has, as you know, President Trump has been waging war against the media. And it was really funny to listen to Chuck Todd talk about how the media has to fight back because they are such good and honest stewards of the news and unbiased. And all that. I mean, he admitted they bring their bias, but he talked about how the media, for the most part, is so fair and honest. And it was kind of laughable.
And what did we reporters do in the face of this cable onslaught, this character assassination on an almost nightly basis? That led to the election of the most fact-free presidential candidate in American history? Nothing. We did nothing. Because we were trained to say nothing. Good reporters know that they have to let the chips fall where they may, and that criticism comes with the gig. Bring it on. We all know that the loudest squealers are usually the ones we've exposed doing something untoward, and that eventually they'll get their comeuppance.
Okay. So this is, you know, coming from Chuck Todd. What he's saying is that, you know, the conservatives of today have planted a mistrust of the media. Chuck Todd, who works for MSNBC, by the way, the network that hired this guy to be a watchdog of government a few years ago, Keith Olbermann.
Of course, if there is one overriding theme to this president's administration, it is the utter, always failing inability to know when to quit when it is behind. And, sir, if you have any hopes that next January 20th will not be celebrated as a day of soul-wrenching, heartfelt thanksgiving because your faithless stewardship of this presidency will have finally come to a merciful end, this last piece of advice. When somebody asks you, sir, about Democrats who must now pull this country back from the abyss you have placed us at, When somebody asks you, sir, about the cooked books and faked threats you foisted on a sincere and frightened nation, when somebody asks you, sir, about your gallant, noble, self-abnegating sacrifice of your golf game so as to soothe the families of the war dead, this advice, Mr. Bush, shut the hell up.
Yeah, it's time for the media in 2018 to start fighting back. Here's the reality of it. Anytime their party is out of power, and by their party, the last time they did a poll of political party preference of the media, 92% are Democrats of the media. Chuck Todd, as they point out at newsbusters.org, in a WikiLeaks exposure in 2015, Chuck and Mrs. Todd invited Clinton staffer John Podesta to their home for cocktails and dinner in honor of Jennifer Palmieri, another Clinton staffer, and her Democrat husband. And so, is it kind of fake news if he's telling us that he's unbiased? No, the media goes unhinged. Keith Olbermann being a perfect example. When George W. Bush was president, the media went unhinged. When Barack Obama became president, the media had an 8-year love fest. Now Donald Trump is president. The media is unhinged. 91% of news stories of Trump are negative. And I talked about this last week when everybody was hailing John McCain, the American hero. Well, back in 2008, when John McCain was running against Barack Obama, you had 68%, I think it was, of the stories about John McCain were negative, only 16% positive. Now, if you watched the coverage last week of the memorial and the funeral, you would have thought the media was 95-5 in favor of McCain when he was running for president. But no, they hated him when he was running for president. And so for Chuck Todd now to be saying it's time for the media to fight back.
A greater willingness to speak in just plain truth. This is happening, I'm telling you. And it means not allowing ourselves to be so spun and not giving guests or sources a platform to spin readers untruths if we know it, even if it angers them. Access isn't journalism's holy grail anymore. It never should have been. Facts are.
Facts are. All right, Chuck, whatever you say. Fastest 15 is coming up next, right after CBS and local news.